Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Evan Giddings, Dan Devone, Big Chick, we're all here with you talking 49er football as they get ready for the Minnesota Vikings 10 a.m. kick.
Yes, sir. We got the kickoff show with myself and Lorenzo Neal at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. So get up bright and early. We'll have you locked and loaded for the 49ers.
That's Ev. We'll prepare you for the big kickoff tomorrow against Minnesota. And that's one of the concerns, the fact that it's an early start, 10 o'clock for the 49ers, and the short week. I do buy into short weeks being a huge disadvantage. And while we can look at this and break it down, and we will, and we talk about position by position and get into Sam Darnold, and we talk about Brock Purdy, and just how the 49ers are a better team, at least on paper, and especially coming off that significant win against the New York Jets, should beat the Minnesota Vikings. But I really am one of those that short weeks scare the hell out of me. And also a short week where it's not like you're going to L.A. or Seattle, but a short week where you have to go and change time zones. I think that could be problematic, especially when you think about the game they just played against the New York Jets and all the buildup and the hype and the anticipation throughout the entire offseason. The minute that was put onto the schedule, the storylines, they are in Rodgers, it's the Jets and the 49ers and this big story. And then after the win, do you concern yourself that maybe just some air left the room and in a short week that this could be a cocktail that could create a dangerous outcome against the Minnesota Vikings coming up tomorrow?
Well, I think those factors are why you see the line around 5.5 or 6, you know, instead of it being a bit more inflated. Like, I think the biggest line this week is the Ravens -9 against the Raiders. And that's probably where this line would be if it was in San Francisco, because I just think that the Niners are wholesomely a more talented group than the Vikings. I do wonder how they come out, though, because against the Jets, they were a little flat, and I thought the preseason might have showed a bit, but once they got their grounding and put the ball on the ground, quite frankly, the game was over. And I think that they're going to try and do that again. They're just going to test Minnesota's front line, who last season tried to combat McCaffrey with, I think they put like 5 or 6 defensive linemen on the front. I mean, they just basically eliminated the run. So I think they're going to try and force Brock Purdy to beat them in this game. And I think Brock is going to be able to do it where he was not last year. So, you know, the Niners, those factors, I think, do weigh a little bit for me. You know, the early start, East Coast trips are a little bit more difficult than the Midwest, but Dan, this is a no-excuses football game. Like, if you're the Niners, you should, and you have to beat, well, I guess you don't have to, but you should beat the Vikings, and I think they should handle them. If they handle the New York Jets, who I think as a whole are a better roster, they're a better team than the Vikings, they should be able to get this one done.
So I just want to get back to Deebo Samuel, and here's the concern I have. With him being like,
his tattoo.
Is he the number two now, I guess? Is that what we're putting him? Where's Garendo?
Oh, running back, you mean?
Yeah, is he number two behind Mason right now?
Well, Kyle Shanahan has always been reluctant. I think a lot of coaches are, but Shanahan specifically. He's reluctant to use rookies. And so I think in game one, you weren't going to see Garendo as the backup running back.
Well,
but
why have him on the roster then?
Well, in case someone goes down, like if Mason got hurt during the game.
Well, McCaffrey went down. So next man up, Garendo. You're getting an NFL paycheck. I know you're a rookie, but brother, we're going to go. Look, I like Deebo.
What if I told you we'll see him this week? I think you will.
I think
I'll tote the rock this week.
But I think the idea of Deebo Samuel, in all seriousness, getting the ball. Look, I like the ball in his hands as much as anybody else, but I like it more in a jet sweep. I like it more in a gadget, sort of how they'll use his cowling kit, I think, where he can use his speed and being a little bit creative. When he's the lone setback and he's sitting behind Brock Purdy, And then he's going A-gap? Like he's going right off the guard's ass? I've never seen a quote-unquote wide receiver get hit in the knees as often as I did Deebo Samuel in that game. I'm like, Deebo with his injury history, and we're thinking about a long-term play with him, and he's going right up the gut as frequently as he did as the featured running back. I grimace. You know why it reminded me, and I mentioned Trey Lance earlier. Like I told everybody on the air, first of all, I was out on Trey Lance as a quarterback, and secondly, I said, you know, this idea of when Trey Lance won the job, and in week two against the Seattle Seahawks, Kyle Shanahan clearly didn't have confidence in him throwing the football, so what he wanted him to do was run more RPO than we've ever seen a Kyle Shanahan offense and a quarterback use. But it was because Kyle Shanahan had lost complete security and this guy getting into 5 and 7 step drops. And I said on the air, like, he is going down with an injury. This is not sustainable. Like, maybe some RPOs occasionally as an element of surprise, but running Trey Lance off tackle or in that A-gap or between the tackles or in the, you know, in the scrum, so to speak, you can't do that in 2024. Somebody's going to square you up. And sure enough, you know, he goes out with that ACL tear, and of course the rest is history. Jimmy Garoppolo comes in, he gets hurt against Miami, opens the door for Brock Purdy, and here we are. But the same can be said to a certain degree when it comes to Deebo Samuel. I think if Deebo Samuel continues to be the lone back and he's going right up Dom Pooney's butt, like that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I also don't think we're going to see that as much as we did on Monday night because, again, I think it goes back to how Shanahan approached the preseason. He didn't play a lot of his starters outside of the final week. I think there was more emphasis on the rookies getting reps, but in the regular season, I just think he's reluctant to use those younger players as much at the beginning of the season. So do I expect Deebo Samuel to get 10 carries or close to 10 carries again? I don't. I also don't expect Jordan Mason to get 29 carries, which is the most a running back has ever had under Kyle Shanahan in the regular season. Because I also don't think Shanahan was aware of how much he was using both those guys. Literally after the game, or maybe it was during the week, he was talking during one of his press conferences. He said he didn't know that Jordan Mason had 29 carries. Now, I understand if you don't, as a head coach, keep track of, you know, how much you use guys throughout your career. You've been there for a long time. He clearly wasn't aware that that was the most carries a running back had ever had under his tutelage as head coach. But to not know that you're running a guy more than 25 times, to me, is... I don't get it. Like, Kyle Shanahan has an equation, and in his mind, what's going to work is what's going to work. And against the Jets, clearly he was running the football. Let's just continue to feed Jordan Mason. He's a big back. He's ready. He's in great condition. And we're just going to ride him. You can't do that every single week. It's the same reason why I believe we're talking about Christian McCaffrey having Achilles strain, because Kyle Shanahan has run him into the ground since the moment they acquired him. And he's been a revelation. And the Niners' winning percentage has been just as good with Christian McCaffrey pretty much as it's been with Brock Purdy and Jimmy Garoppolo and all the rest. McCaffrey's a game changer. But when you use a player that much, there's a residual effect from it. There's a consequence. And for Jordan Mason to be in his first year primarily toting the rock, which I think he'll have to do not only this week, but it sounds like for the coming weeks as well, I do think that Kyle Shanahan is going to have to look in the mirror and say, all right, there's a reason why we got this guy Garendo. There's a reason why we've kept our running back room as wide as it has. And even if it's Deebo being involved, I just think there needs to be a more even distribution, because I don't want to see him just basically use up Jordan Mason because he doesn't have McCaffrey.
I agree with you. But I don't think it should deter you from not running the football, because you can get a multitude of guys back there and be effective, as they did that year they went to the Super Bowl the first time against the Kansas City Chiefs, and you had that three-headed monster. Was it Mostert, Breida, and Coleman, essentially?
Yeah.
And it was whoever had the hot hand, they would ride. And getting back to something like that, if Mason continues to prove that he can be a number one, or at least be a running back that you can count on, to see the load being divided between those two, and let's see what Isaac Garendo can do. And if you got three guys back there, that's ideal for, I think, someone like that at Kyle Shanahan. I like the idea of running a football. I just don't want to see it with Deebo Samuel. Stop with that. If you want to give Deebo the ball, we all love Deebo in open space, but I don't like Deebo going off tackle or off guard or being, you know, Larry Zonka and trying to bowl people over. Like, that to me is just, that's scary. And it should scare every 49er fan, because Debo didn't play in that game against Minnesota a year ago, and Trent Williams didn't play in that game. And that's a game they lost to the Vikings. He's one of those guys that you take out of the equation and you're not as good a football team. I think you can win, as they prove, without Christian McCaffrey. McCaffrey's a great, I mean, listen, he's the reigning offensive player of the year. He finished third in the MVP voting a year ago. I don't need to tell you what it is that he's able to do with the football and how good of a football player he is. But I think you can win without McCaffrey. I don't know if you can win without Debo. And he certainly can't win without Trent Williams.
Well, if you can win without McCaffrey, I think you can win without
Debo. Well, I'm just looking at the recent track record.
True. No, that's true. But we also haven't really seen the Niners without Christian McCaffrey. You know, I don't know. I think the reliance on the run game is where the 49ers are basically able to overcome. But the thing about week one is also it's a stylistic matchup, right? Like, the Jets have an incredible pass defense. So using the idea is to get Debo the ball. It doesn't matter how. It could be on the ground. It could be a bubble screen. God forbid he has to run a route beyond 15 yards. But you want the ball in his hands. Okay, so if you're telling me Sauce Gardner, DJ Reed are on the outside, Debo's not the greatest one-on-one wide receiving winning guy. So you got to find a way to get him the ball somehow. And I think the easiest way to do it is just to line him up in the backfield and give him the ball. Like, just
straight
hand it
ahead?
Off. Just hand it off.
I think you can get... You can get a little bit more innovative. It's Kyle Shanahan, for crying out loud. Just like simply saying, here's the ball. Go, you know, run right up Highway 71, Trent Williams. That just seems to be like getting up and in there against the big uglies is not utilizing, I think, Debo Samuel at its what could be his most effective.
Well, when they got creative, Debo nearly... I think they were trying to run like a reverse wide receiver pass back to Brock Purdy, and then that ended up going nowhere. Like... I hear what you're saying, and yes, there's a lot of bodies banging around and pinballing in between the tackles, but if you have an advantage, that's what you try to exploit. And I think that Shanahan is one of the best, if not the best, in the NFL at figuring out where the weaknesses are in opposing defense and just attacking it relentlessly. Now, I think that also is a reason why he might not be aware of how many carries he's getting his running back, because in his mind, it doesn't matter. He's so siloed in on what the game plan is, and the Jets could not stop the run, especially in the second half. So what are we going to do? We're going to run the ball, and we're going to run it between the tackles. So if you are the 49ers this week against the Vikings, I think that Brian Flores is going to try and take away the run. So that means there is going to be more pressure on Brock Purdy. And I don't know if we see as many carries from Debo Samuel between the tackles. Maybe we see him a little bit more on the outside. We see Brock Purdy trying to get the ball quick more like he did in the second half against the New York Jets, as opposed to kind of like a slow start in the first quarter. But, I mean, I don't like Debo running the ball more than he has to. But without McCaffrey, this is going to be the trickle-down effect that the Niners are going to have to figure out how they manage. And they're going to have to load manage this season. I don't think it's as much about regular season wins as it is about getting to the postseason healthy. And that's where week one was a little bit, I don't want to say concerning, but if it continues, then concern does start to set in. Because if Mason is getting 30 touches a game, if Debo is getting 10 carries a game... Mm. That I think eventually, you know, come week 10, we're looking at some guys with some very heavy legs and a lot of banged up bodies.
Remember Debo, was it 3 years ago now? Or was it 2 years ago?
2021.
How creative he was just before he signed his contract.
Yeah, it was in 2021.
How creative he was, especially in the postseason against Dallas. They just needed the ball in his hands. And Kyle Shanahan was Kyle Shanahan. He got really innovative in drawing up these X's and O's of how he could utilize just simply putting the ball in the hands of Debo Samuel and letting him do Debo Samuel type things, who I think is the greatest open field runner as a wide receiver I've ever seen. But just simply like saying, okay, go off that A gap and make it happen. I don't know about, was I the only one that was grimacing every time he would just get the ball and run straight ahead? Because to me, he's still a wide receiver. Like, I look at him, I'm like, that's a wide receiver going up and inside. What are we doing? Maybe once, but not eight consecutive times, but his eight carries were probably in that same zone. Like, I was like, he's a wideout at the end of the day. What's going on here?
Yeah, but he's also a heat-seeking missile. I think one of the things that...
In space, he is.
Well, but he's also he's just a bruising player. I mean, and the Niners are a bruising football team. I thought they snatched the souls of the Jets by basically just running the ball straight at them. And if there is one thing that can kill an opposing team's morale, it's knowing that the opposing that the Niners, for example, are going to just line up and run the ball.
Oh, I agree with
you. There's nothing you can do about it. I mean, that is the most demoralizing part of a football game, watching as an opposing fan, seeing your team not being able to stop the run. And Deebo Samuel is a part of that. I understand he typically doesn't do it as a running back, but also remember in that 2021 season, the reason why I didn't like Deebo running the ball as much as he did is because it was week one.
Exactly.
It was the first week of the season. If you remember that year, Deebo began to tote the rock a lot more the second half of the year. He's primarily used as a wide receiver the first half of the season. I think he had something like, what was it, 1,300, 1,400, 1,500 yards? I mean, he was a damn good wide receiver the first half of that season, and then Mike McDaniel helped get him into that running back mode, and that completely opened up their offense. I don't think they need to do that every single game, but Kyle Shanahan clearly, with the absence of McCaffrey, and maybe it wasn't planned, I'm not sure, but with the absence of McCaffrey, adjusted, and Deebo was a big part of that.
Listen, Isaac Garendo, kid out of Louisville, you're equipped to play this position, the halfback, running back. Like, that's what you learned to do, okay? You've been doing it for a while. Same with Jordan Mason. You know, there's... You know the angles to take, how to take those hits. So, Garendo, get the carries. Deebo Samuel's a wide receiver. Yes, he can bounce off of guys and he's strong, but he's still a wide receiver learning to play that position. And get the ball in his hands. I just have an issue with him being, you know, just much like that of Trey Lance. I know Trey Lance was a remarkable player back in the day in terms of what he could do with his feet, and Kyle Shanahan got excited with the RPO, but putting him in between tackles, it was just a matter of time before he got dinged. And then, sure enough, I do want to get into, first we're going to hear from our man Austin, who's standing by out in San Jose.
But also to your point, Dan, by the way, it's like if you're looking at, so you had 8 carries week one, if you're telling me he's going to get 5 to 10 carries every single week, I don't want my running back rushing the ball by the end of the season over 100 times.
Well, I don't mind if he's getting it again on those jet sweeps or an end around, or you're doing something again. What Kyle Shanahan typically does to utilize Deebo Samuel, that's fine.
He's going to seek contact wherever he is. He's not a guy that runs out of bounds. So in a way, I think it's, if you want him running the ball, it doesn't matter if it's on the outside or the inside. He's going to take some damage.
All right, we're going to open up the phone lines at 888-957-9570. We start things out in San Jose. Austin standing by. Austin, what's on your mind, my man?
Hey, what's up, fellas? Happy Saturday, Dan. Listen, and Evan, listen, guys. Dan, it's football, man. I mean, these guys, you know, I'm not saying anything you haven't heard before, but to me, I'm old school, man. You know, you sign these guys, you pay them money, they play football. You know, if they want to run Deebo, War, or less on a given Sunday, that's what his job is. I don't think he's a classic wide receiver. I think he's more of a kind of a tweener guy, right? And I think Shanahan likes to use him because for diversion and to keep things, mix things up. So I think his role on the 49ers is very unique in terms of other teams. If Deebo went to another team, you might see him in a little different situation. Like, I heard he was supposed to go. The rumor was that he was going to go to the Ravens. Can you imagine if the Ravens had Deebo? That's a thought, but. So yeah, so I'm not into load management. I don't believe in it. Like CMC gave the Lions everything that he had last year. He's hurt this year. That's the way it goes, man. I mean, that's every other team in the league deals with it. So you start trying to load manage, and you think you already got it, the playoffs locked. And I keep hearing Evan and people talk about, well, you know, it's not important to the playoffs. Well, first of all, you got to get to the playoffs. I mean, there's no guarantee you get to the playoffs. I mean, just because you beat the Jets. And by the way, what vanilla defensive Salah. Salah was making sure he can come back to the Niners the way he dialed up that. That was the weakest defensive scheme I've seen in a long time. Put no pressure on Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy had slippers in a bathrobe back there, and he could sit down and relax. He got no pressure. So I don't think Salah has a long time. I think Salah's going to – he may not make it through the year based on what I saw. So, guys, I'm enjoying the conversation. Oh, last thing, Dan. I know you haven't talked about Lance yet. But my thoughts about Lance are very – I think they abuse him. I think Shanahan completely misused Lance. And I don't think the kid's done yet. I think he's got a future. It may be a little rough, but I think Lance will be in the NFL. He'll play someday. That's my thoughts, guys.
I really hope so. I think I tell you this, Ev, that you get to a certain point, a certain age, where it's not so much about teams. You pull for good people, and you get to know some of these players, and you're around the locker rooms, and Big Chick is hanging out with the 49ers all week. And you just, at the end of the day, you just want people that you like to do well, just like anything else in life. And I want to see Trey Lance, because I think Trey Lance comes from good stock. I like his parents. I like his story. And I hope he does well. But in terms of being a quarterback, I'm sorry, man. I don't mean to remind people this, but I will. Because the kahuna is going to go there. When he threw his first pass, I told everybody that, and I wanted to like the guy. I'm like, there's a hitch in this dude's giddy up. Like, and he's not very accurate. I'm like, I'm holding my breath. And then as it went along, I became this guy on Dandelion Island saying, I'm sorry, man, I don't see it. And everybody, including that morning crew, my God, they had actual size, like life-size posters of the guy that they would kiss in the morning before they came on the air and did their show. It was like, this is the second coming. And I didn't want to be that guy, but I'm like, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be a better chance to win. That's how I became the Jimmy Garoppolo apologist. I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo is a quarterback, but at the time, he gave you a better chance to win than Trey Lance. But I had to stand on that island all by myself for years before the realization that Trey Lance was not that guy.
So do you feel vindicated?
Absolutely. And I'm not shallow. I'll admit it.
It is funny to me, though, because you have always loved Sam Darnold. You have not necessarily been as big of a fan as Trey Lance. I mean, when Sam Darnold came into the league, he was 21 years old. Trey Lance came into the league, he's very young as well. What's to say Trey Lance's career is done? If Sam Darnold still's got a chance?
Well, the reason is, and I hope that I hope I'm wrong, because, again, I like the kid, is that, and listen, I'm not JT O'Sullivan. I'm not a quarterback guru.
I think it's just JT.
What's his last name?
No, I'm just kidding.
I think it's O'Sullivan.
Yeah, no, I know.
All right. But when you look at Trey Lance, it's just like, I don't know, switching to a hybrid linebacker or deep, it's just like quarterback. When he threw the five interceptions, it's not by accident. Ask Kyle Shanahan or anybody that saw him practicing with the 49ers. He just was not accurate with the football. And I go back to what Bill Walsh, the genius, the architect of the West Coast offense, what he would always say and preach, he's like, I can teach you a lot of things as a quarterback. Listen to me. I'll get you paid, and I'll win you Super Bowls. One thing I cannot teach is accuracy. You either have that in the DNA or you do not. And I think that when it came to Trey Lance, it's just the accuracy, the delivery of a football just looked very awkward and not fluid right from day one. And that's where things sort of begin and end with my assessment of Trey Lance. Sam Darnold, on the other hand, I mean, the dude is the prototypical quarterback. 6'4", you want to vote for the guy. Right out of Southern California, central casting. This guy can make every single throw. It's just a matter of he was with Adam Gase, and then he was with Matt Rhule. And it's just one of those guys that just needed to be in the right environment and get the right opportunity. But I think he's smart enough. I think he can make all the throws. It's just he just needs the opportunity, and now he's getting that with Kevin O'Connell.
Yeah, but I think there's a lot of quarterbacks you can make the case for it. If they were in the right environment, they could succeed. I don't think Sam Darnold is anything special. I just think he's in a better situation now. So, I don't know. I mean, like, I'm not the biggest Sam Darnold fan. I don't think he necessarily has it between the ears, though he has all the physical talent in the world. And I don't know if you're going to go coward on me, but I think Colin Coward had Sam Darnold as, like, you know, the next coming of Peyton Manning or was it Aaron Rodgers or something like that.
God.
I mean, just look, Sam Darnold had a very nice week one against the hapless New York Giants. And I think this week, against his old flame, you know, speaking of people you shouldn't have got tattoos for, I'm glad Sam Darnold didn't get a 49ers tattoo right above his you-know-what and get a tramp stamp, because he's now on his fourth team, and he'll probably be on another team in another couple years. And I think this weekend is not going to be a great day for him. I think he's going to struggle against the Niners, because the one part we didn't talk about much in the Jets game, we also haven't mentioned McCaffrey much, we can get into on the other side, was also how good this 49ers defense looked. And I think that's a big part of their game plan moving forward as well. With a little bit more consistency and cohesion, this group is going to make Brock Purdy's job a bit easier tomorrow.
Yeah, let's talk about the defense, because I really think that was as much of a storyline as anything else. Want to get into Nick Sorensen. By the way, another guy that was part of the cancel culture when it came to quarterbacks, number one picks, Jared Goff was another guy. It's like, oh, Jared Goff sucks. That's the end of him. Let's just move on and look what it is that he's doing out there in Detroit. All right, we continue. Time to talk to the...
By the way, we also have some McCaffrey news we have to get into on the other side.
Yes, we'll talk about McCaffrey and the IR, which it was seemed to be inevitable. If you heard the press conference of what it is that Kyle Shanahan, that's now official. We'll detail that for you. The latest news concerning Christian McCaffrey. Also get into...
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
49ers on the other side of the ball and talk defense with Evan Giddings and Dan Abone on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
All right, we have what I guess could be deemed breaking news.
Yeah, I think so.
The latest concerning Christian McCaffrey, who has now officially been put on IR. Can you detail things for the fans at home, Sev?
Well, and I do want to bring Carter Chickering into this because he's been down in Santa Clara all week, but pretty much it was asked yesterday to Kyle Shanahan after Christian McCaffrey was not practicing yesterday. Pryor was a limited participant Wednesday and Thursday, and he said there's a possibility of Christian McCaffrey going on IR. He officially was out for Sunday against the Vikings, but then 15 minutes ago, Adam Schefter of ESPN reported that 49ers are officially placing Christian McCaffrey on injured reserve due to his calf tightness and Achilles tendonitis, so he'll now miss the next four games at least before the team assesses whether he can return in mid-October. But we were talking during the break with Carter, and it feels like this was, I don't know if you'd label it inevitable, but it seemed like this is the way it was trending. What did you see from McCaffrey this week?
I saw him struggling on Thursday, there's no doubt. I mean, I thought that him just sprinting up and down the field seemed crazy to me when, you know, he clearly was in pain, too. He made it quite clear that he was in pain, basically, on Thursday. And Friday, he was out there still, which I was shocked at, frankly. So, I don't know. I think, obviously, putting him on IR, though, is to me, a very good move at this point.
Now, according to Shanahan, it seemed as though there was more optimism last week when it was, I don't know who you believe, but it was a game-time decision. And it looked as though Thursday, Big Chick, you correct me if I'm wrong, that this week it actually got worse. Is that an accurate assessment?
Yeah.
So it looks as though it's going from bad to worse. And so you talked about this, that if you're the 49ers and you're Kyle Shanahan, that right now you got to prepare as though he's not coming back this year. Now, I don't mean to get, you know, I don't mean to get that drastic or that theatrical, but it's the next man up in the NFL. And so we were talking about Jordan Mason, and we were talking about Debo carrying the football, and now Isaac Garendo. Do the 49ers, and you have Taylor also at number three on that depth chart, do they entertain going out and acquiring another running back that has some experience? I know Jeff Wilson's name has been bannered about, but what are we doing when we look at the running back room now going forward without Christian McCaffrey for an extended period of time as he officially goes on IR?
Well, I don't think you need to think about getting a running back yet, but if Christian McCaffrey is not looking like he's going to be ready to return after he's done with the IR, because they have a month now, then I do think that's something they'll address at the deadline. Or we'll also see, like, all right, to rewind a bit, the moment that they signed Matt Breida during training camp, my eyebrows were raised about McCaffrey and his calf strain. Because I don't think that the Niners would go out and bring in extra bodies. Now, they eventually cut Breida, but he might be a candidate to come back. I don't think that they would go out and try and find extra running backs unless there was a possibility that this could become serious. I also think that McCaffrey and his tendonitis, it's something that you can't predict. Like, that's why it was worse this week maybe than it was last week, because from everything we know about the injury, it's completely day-to-day. And so McCaffrey, to Carter's point, might have been trying to push it Wednesday, Thursday. That might have aggravated it. It also might have just been feeling terrible on Friday when he tried to test it, and that's why he didn't practice, and that's why they're just going to give him time to try and heal this thing. Because the only thing, according to Dr. Nirav Pandya, one of our medical experts here at 95.7 The Game was talking about, is you just need rest. And if the rest is not good enough to get you back to 100%, then I'm not really sure what you can do. And so I don't want to frame it as a ticking time bomb in regards to a season-ending injury for McCaffrey, but I do think that if the Niners are wise, they need to approach the season like he's not coming back this year, either because he is not physically capable of doing so, or because I don't believe he'll be 100% when he comes back. Now, the luxury they do have is obviously Jordan Mason, and the fact that the Niners are a team that, even though to Austin's point earlier, they have to get to the postseason, I feel pretty confident with the roster that they have that they can get to the postseason without Christian McCaffrey. But the overarching question is, can they win a Super Bowl without Christian McCaffrey? And that I have some doubts about. So does it decrease the Niners' chances to get to where they want to go and hoist a trophy? Yes. Does it completely kill their season? I don't believe so, even if he does not return from this Achilles tendonitis.
Well, now front and center becomes Jordan Mason. This is not just a stopgap or an abridge until McCaffrey comes back this week or the following week, but now he becomes the focal point. And when you think about what Jordan Mason was able to do, I think the 49ers will be okay. Now, is he Christian McCaffrey? No. And I think you lose a lot in terms of passing the football and sort of the passing schemes and checking down or getting what it is that on those wheel routes or what it is that McCaffrey was able to provide. Jordan Mason did catch a pass for a first down last week, but is he the receiver? Is he the football player? No, but this team has so many weapons that you're going to be okay without the likes of Christian McCaffrey. That's sort of the interim outlook. Now that we're talking about Christian McCaffrey potentially out for a month or potentially even longer, we don't know. We just have to let this play out. I can't tell you how good or bad Jordan Mason will be as your workhorse and as your number one a month or 2 months from now. So we're stepping into an area of unknown. I think that the one piece of this that might provide some level of security and sort of soften the blow, the news once again coming down this morning, just moments ago, if you're just joining us, Christian McCaffrey has officially been put on IR, which means he has to be out a minimum of some 4 weeks. So he's gone for the next month. But if there is an area of feel good in all of this, it's the play of that offensive line. And it's not necessarily Trent Williams or bust, where, okay, it's third and two, or we need a yard, or we need a couple of yards. You know where we're going. Everybody knows where we're going. We're running left. The play of Dominic Pooney, I don't know that they've had a rookie. In fact, I want to say that they haven't. I mean, they've drafted two offensive linemen in the era of Kyle Shanahan, Aaron Banks and McClinchy, and they're both not bad, but they're okay. And I think that they may have stumbled on a guy in the third round, an 86 overall, on Dom Pooney, who looks like he could be a star at that position. And what does that mean? Well, it means that now that you have a little bit more balance on both sides of the ball, as far as running left and now running right behind Dominic Pooney, as they did on a couple of occasions in Monday Night's Affair. So you don't want to lose Christian McCaffrey. But the fact that the offensive line looked as good as it did, and again, we're all overreacting because it was just one game, but because of the fact the offensive line looks so effective in week one, bodes well for whoever is the running back now for the San Francisco 49ers, and it appears as though it's going to be Jordan Mason at least for a while.
I mean, they've always been able to run the ball. It doesn't really matter who the offensive line has been. It frankly hasn't mattered who the running back has been. Kyle Shanahan is just great at creating misdirection in the backfield, and that allows you to pick up 4 to 5 yards to more pretty consistently. But with McCaffrey, I'm not going to lie. If I'm looking ahead, so he's going to miss the first four games, or the next four games, Minnesota, L.A., New England, Arizona, and then the first week he'd be eligible to return would be October 10th. That's a Thursday night game at Seattle. I find it difficult to believe that they'd bring him back on a short week with not much time to practice prior to. So honestly, Dan, optimistically, I'm penciling October 20th, Sunday against the Kansas City Chiefs. I think that's optimistically the first time we would see Christian McCaffrey. And ironically, it's the first game that they had him for when they traded for him a couple years ago against from the Carolina Panthers. So I think if you're hoping to see McCaffrey soon, the soonest we will see him will be week 7. But in the meantime, at the very least, you have some winnable opponents. I don't think the Niners need McCaffrey to beat the Vikings. I think the Rams are a better team, but they're pretty banged up right now. I don't think they need them to beat the New England Patriots, though they just knocked off the Bengals. I think by week 4, they'll come back down to earth. I don't think they need them to beat the Cardinals. Maybe they don't even need them to beat the Seahawks, but they do need them to beat the Chiefs. They might need them. They might need McCaffrey to beat the Cowboys. The Niners are eventually going to need Christian McCaffrey. And so that's kind of the panic that I think is coursing through a lot of people's veins at this point. It's not necessarily about what's happening now because they can survive him, but the question of the Niners' ceiling, that's now what needs to be assessed, is what is their ceiling without Christian McCaffrey? And I find it very hard to believe that if they want to accomplish what they could not last year, that his absence does not drastically impact that.
I wouldn't say drastically, and I'm one of those that just firmly believes that, yes, it's a drop-off. But again, Kyle Shanahan has always proven that he can run the football. And his replacement went for 150 yards. What more do you want out of the running back position? Now, obviously, McCaffrey's a better football player, and he gives you, you know, more bells and whistles. There's more things that you can do with him. But to me, this is just me talking, I don't think he's going to be the reason why you don't win that Super Bowl. I think that he's proven, and I'm talking about Kyle Shanahan, the last time he went to a Super Bowl, again, he did it with three guys, or the time before, the first time he met Kansas City, with Mostert, Breida, and Coleman. And this has been true throughout not only, you know, Kyle Shanahan's tenure, and whether you attribute this to Bobby Turner or his old man, Mike Shanahan, for crying out loud, would turn out 1,000-yard rushers every year. And they were not household names. Yeah, we all know Terrell Davis, but how many of us know Mike Anderson or Orlandis Gary or Clinton Portis? And they were all a product of that system that was, which has now been handed down from Mike Shanahan, Bobby Turner, to that of his son, and that being Kyle Shanahan. So if you want to run the football and you want to burn clock, or as you mentioned, just take away the soul of the opposing team, well, as they proved on Monday night, you can still do that. Jordan Mason is more than adequate. And yes, I think McCaffrey gives you a better opportunity to win. Is he going to be the difference as to why you don't get to an NFC Championship game or win an NFC Championship game or win a Super Bowl? I could be wrong, but I don't think so. I think this team is so loaded, has so much talent, and if they are as improved as they were defensively on Monday night, and if that's sustainable throughout the entire season, you can still get to where it is that you want to go.
Yeah, that's true, but Christian McCaffrey was also their best offensive player in the Super Bowl last year. I know he had a fumble, but he had 160 scrimmage yards. Like, Christian McCaffrey is a player that I agree against the Vikings or maybe the Jets or the Patriots. I don't think they necessarily need him, but this Achilles tendonitis to me is not something that is all of a sudden going to go away. I hope it does. I hope miraculously Christian McCaffrey returns to form as 100%. And by the end of the season, this Niners team is heading up and they're peaking. And we can look at the McCaffrey injury or return as essentially a trade deadline deal. The way that a lot of teams look at, you know, injuries around the deadline is just kind of additions. Again, like you said, gravy. That's the perfect scenario. But if I'm the Niners, I have to also approach the rest of this season like that's not going to be the case. Gravy is gravy. You should not be reliant on a cherry on top of your year. You have to figure out how to move forward without Christian McCaffrey. And I do think that the remainder of this season, it's not, look, the season doesn't fall apart the way that potentially the Miami Dolphins season is going to fall apart, or the way that the Green Bay Packers season might fall apart with Jordan Love getting hurt. That's not the case for the running back position. And I also agree that the Shanahans are kind of directly involved in devaluing the position with how many different guys both his father and now Kyle have been able to use to achieve the heights that they have. But there's no doubt that Christian McCaffrey is one of the best offensive players in football. And I find it hard to believe that even though he plays a replaceable position, that having the best by a mile at that place does not hurt you in the long run if you don't have him.
You're not as good, but I know that this may not be the consensus, and I'm not representing a lot of people. I still think that he's not going to be the reason. If you're good enough to win the Super Bowl, you'll win it because your defense, your offensive line is better. And yes, McCaffrey makes it easier, but you'll still win that Super Bowl. I'd be more concerned if Trent Williams is out. I'd be more concerned if Fred Warner was gone for a month. I think those guys are more impactful in terms of cause and effect of winning football games. Christian McCaffrey in the running back position, we just saw on Monday night that his replacement not only did well, but carved it up for 148 yards.
Now, what if Jordan Mason this week gets 10 carries for 40 yards? You know, then we might be back to square zero. I also think part of the Jets' game plan did not include Jordan Mason. Like, I don't think they were assuming that this guy was going to turn into Marshall Faulk and just run the ball down. You know, like, they didn't expect Eric Dickerson on Monday night.
Yeah, but I think a lot of what... I didn't see Jordan Mason really just be untouched to the second level. Some plays I did. A lot of what he does is just, you know, sort of the stuff that I talked about that I do not want to see Deebo Samuel doing.
And that is yards after contact?
Yards after contact and just putting your nose up and in there. And he's always been that guy, right? He's a guy that always would just plant his foot and go. It's the reason why he beat out Trey Sermon. Remember Sermon who came out of Ohio State?
I do.
And he was supposed to be that guy. He was drafted ahead of Mason. They both came out the same year. But Bobby Turner's like, you got to go. You need to plant that foot. Stop, like, dancing in the hole. And that's exactly what Mason does. Mason is a guy that just will give you 3 or 4 yards, but it's all grit. And that's, you know, that's what you're looking for out of a running back. And he's not going to have the flash like that of a McCaffrey, but he's going to get the job done. And I would say if he has 10 carries for 40 yards, it's because, you know, that's the offensive. If McCaffrey was toting the rock, what's he going to get it? 10 yards and maybe 45 yards or 10 carries and 50 yards? I mean, you're relying on that offensive line and that whole blocking scheme. I don't think Christian McCaffrey is going to be the exclusive reason as to why you don't win that Super Bowl. There's going to be other things that are going to rear their head.
Well, sure. I mean, Christian McCaffrey wasn't the reason why they lost the Super Bowl last year, but his fumble certainly didn't help. By the way, last year against the Minnesota Vikings, granted, you're right, without Trent Williams, McCaffrey had 15 for 45 on the ground.
Mm.
So Williams was not present. However, I do think that Brian Flores is a defensive coordinator that will try and take that away from the Niners, especially coming off of the performance we saw against the Jets. They were perfectly fine, the Shanahan play calling scheme was, with just giving the ball to Jordan Mason. And that's all that they needed to do. Brock Purdy had to make a couple of plays, and to his credit, he generally hits all the layups and can also, you know, connect on a few deep balls, 26-yard completion to Kittle, near 40-yard completion to Juszczyk. Like, he's going to hit those. I'm surprised, though, you haven't brought up the quarterback, because to me, that's where my attention immediately turns to. Without McCaffrey, Brock Purdy's job is going to be more difficult, and he's going to have to play better than I think he did last season. Or at least he's going to have to be more, efficient with the ball. I mean, they're going to have to throw it more, I think. And I don't think he's going to have as much of a dynamic running back to rely on, because this is the other part, too. When Deebo Samuel was in the backfield running the ball last year, McCaffrey, you could put in the slot. You could just flex him out as a wide receiver, and you have to pay attention to him. You can't do that with Jordan Mason. He can run the ball, but he's a physical runner. I think he has a bit more wiggle than people give him credit for, but he's primarily north-south. But the moment that he's off the field, there's less question marks as far as the offense for the Niners than when there was with McCaffrey.
I'm with you that I think that the defense will dictate a lot of this. That Flores is going to recognize that, okay, he's not a rookie, but Jordan Mason proved to me that you can beat us. And he'll stack the box. He'll spy him. He'll do whatever it is that he needs to do to sort of take that away from the 49ers. And if that happens, because every game has its own personality, and while they had success running right at the New York Jets, if that's taken away, well, then Brock Purdy may put the ball up some 50 to 55 times in this game. I mean, again, you have to take what it is that the defense is providing you.
Well, that's the other part of it, too, though, is that Purdy, as great as he was last year, as efficient as he was last year, he was not very good when he had to throw more than 30 times. In fact, I think all of one of their losses came when he threw the ball 30 or more times. Last week, I think he threw it 27 times against the Jets, which was kind of a lot for him. But, I mean, in a perfect world, I think Purdy's sitting at, you know, 19 for 25, 280 to 300 yards and a couple scores. So can he do that if he doesn't have McCaffrey on the field? Perhaps. I just think he's going to have to throw the ball more, and that's where sometimes he and the Niners offense can at least have gotten into trouble. But I don't think that impacts them much against the Vikings. Again, I'm more thinking about what this team is going to look like without McCaffrey. And I don't believe that long term, and even over the course of this month, it can operate at an optimal level. Not to say, look, Jordan Mason had a career game, and credit to him. I just find it very difficult to believe that he's going to be able to repeat that performance week after week.
Oh, he's not going to run for 150 yards.
Well, I mean, but that's the thing. Like, not even the workload. I'm just saying the efficiency of his runs. I don't see it happening repeatedly once defenses understand what the Niners have to do or what they can do with him, because he's a little bit more one-dimensional. He is more one-dimensional than McCaffrey.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, Carter.
Can I offer a glass-half-full kind of aspect of this whole thing? Is Christian McCaffrey's been injured. He's had injury issues throughout his career, and through his Niner tenure, he has had basically no injury issues. This was bound to come at some point, right? If it was going to come, could it have come at a better time than this? I mean, yeah, they have three divisional games, but I mean, for the most part, beside the Rams, this is a really easy stretch for the Niners, right? And if you're going to get your guy healthy, right, and get this, look, this is clearly something that could lead to a much bigger injury if it's not really just like, let's get it out of the way kind of thing. And if it's going to happen at some point, is there a better time for it to happen than now?
Yeah, you're probably right. Do it in the beginning of the season.
Well, yes, unless it's something that lingers for the entire year.
Well, that's the concern. Then,
yeah. I'm not worried about these next 4 weeks. I mean, they play bottom feeders. I'm not worried about the Vikings tomorrow. Even if the Niners somehow lose that game, I think they'll still be okay over the course of the next 4 weeks. But my biggest concern is that we don't see 23 again. And if we do, he looks like he did, according to Carter, on Thursday, where he's grimacing every time he runs the ball.
Well, he won't play if that's the case. But I think the larger issue is the injury.
Help.
And I think the location of that injury. Like, anything that starts or is near the Achilles, yikes. Remember Kevin Durant? I always go back and, you know, that in that play, in that loss to Toronto, where, you know, first it was a calf injury, and then, lo and behold, less than 10 days later, he snaps his Achilles. And I think everybody's aware of that. It's why Giannis didn't play, and they shut him down towards the end of last year. He had a calf injury. It wasn't about the calf. They're like, you know, that Achilles, bro, we can't have that thing snap and have you out for the next 2 years. And I think that's sort of where the 49ers are at. It's an Achilles. It's just like, we have to err on the side of caution. The fact, Big Chick, that he was actually out on the field and running, I mean, I would bubble wrap this guy until that thing is at 100%, trying to, like, squeeze him into Sunday's game.
Once he's on the field, you can't bubble wrap him.
That's just it. But in order to get on the field, you have to make sure that thing's 100%.
I mean, look, he said last week that if it was a playoff game, he would have played. And while I take his word for that, I don't know. Achilles never popped up last year when they were talking about his calf strain, which I think he had or suffered, what was it, week 17?
He said this is entirely different. It has nothing to do with last year.
Well, no. I think it's on a different calf, but exactly, it's a different injury.
Yeah.
Playing through a calf strain is, I believe, different than playing through an Achilles strain. And I think they tried to disguise it as a calf strain when it first happened, but now we know it's tendonitis, and tendonitis is not something you can control. You can't just—I mean, I was reading an article in The Athletic for Matt Barrows, and there are certain things you can do to help it. There's, you know, platelet enrichment. You can give him shots. There's obviously painkillers. There's drugs you can take, but there's no magic potion that's going to make your Achilles that's already strained all of a sudden just heal itself. There's no Wolverine coming around the block.
Time, right? I mean, that's the only way this thing is going to heal, is that you don't have contact and you're not putting pressure on it.
But a month, I don't know. I mean, look.
Is that enough time? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think it is.
Yeah, I don't either.
That's why I would say optimistically, if we are looking at this from glass half full perspective, I think week seven is the soonest that we possibly see McCaffrey. That's against the Kansas City Chiefs.
All right, we continue here on 95.7 The Game. Your thoughts, Christian McCaffrey out for the next month. He's officially on IR, that word coming down just moments ago. Do the 49ers have enough with Jordan Mason, Isaac Garendo, the rookie out of Louisville? Want to get your calls, your thoughts, 888-957-9570. Evan Giddings, Big Chick, Danavone here on 95.7 The Game.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.